Hi, this is Max Cohn in Athens, in Greece. We are the 12th of August 2009, and I am here at the Jewish Museum of Greece with the director, Mrs. Zanette Battino. So, Mrs. Zanette Battino, can you explain us what we can see in your museum?
Yes, thank you. The Jewish Museum of Greece is a historical and ethnographic museum. It covers the history of the most ancient community on European soil. I'm sure not many people know that the Jewish communities of Greece were the first ones to be created, at least in the middle of the 3rd century before Common Era, on European soil. And this was created because of cultural interest and economic flourishment in the area, and not because of wars and exiles, like one can find so much of that in the history of the Jewish people at large. But we are speaking about a very interesting and cosmopolitan environment of the Eastern Mediterranean basin in the late Hellenistic times that saw the emergence of a contact between the Jews and the Greeks of the time, and a Hellenization of Jews, mainly from communities of the Eastern Mediterranean basin, such as Alexandria in Egypt, Antioch, Sebastia, Ephesus, etc., where the people, as I said, had been Hellenized. They had translated or changed their names in Greek sounding ones or actual Greek ones. They were dressed in the Greek way, and of course in their everyday life they spoke the Hellenistic common language, which was the Greek of the time. So this is the time when that saw what we term as the Hellenistic diaspora, a movement of Hellenized, mostly Jews, from these communities and from the land of Israel itself at the time, Palestine, to Greek islands, island cities and mainland capitals, some of which have had a Jewish community almost or very shortly after they were founded, such as Thessaloniki and Corinth and Chalcis, for instance.
Can you tell us a few words about the language they spoke, Yevanit or Romaniot? What is it exactly?
Certainly. It is the In a straight line, the development in time, through time, of this Hellenistic common language that we speak about. It was the Greek of the time that proceeded and evolved like any language, which is a living body, let's say, through time, right through to Demotic Greek of today. Yevanit or Romaniot, as it is known, or Judeo-Greek, as other people refer to them, is the everyday language of the Greek-speaking Jews, coming straight from the Hellenistic common language to the Demotic Greek of today, without going through some artificial stages that the official Greek language went through, such as Katharevousa. For this reason, and also because it produced theater, literature, and poetry, it's very important for the study of Greek language, but also the Jewish people at large.
It was written in Hebrew or what?
Yes, quite. For a long time, it was written like Yiddish, with Hebrew characters, but it's a proper Demotic Greek language. We have some such documents in our museum, which were found in prayer books, in Romaniot prayer books, and they are mostly Piyutim, which are written in this Judeo-Greek language in Hebrew characters, or instructions on how to celebrate certain holidays and how to do specific things in the Romaniot way. One that comes to mind at the moment speaks about of Bedikat Hametz, how to look for the Hametz in the home and prepare it for Pesach.
And there were some Hebrew words in this language or Aramaic words?
Absolutely. The bulk of it, of course, was Greek, as we already said, but there was Hebrew, Aramaic, Arabic, Turkish, French, Italian words throughout the centuries. So it is a rich language that is bears a living testimonial to the history of the area.
But nobody speaks this language today, or yes?
Absolutely. Anyone who speaks proper Greek today can understand this language. I'm a Romaniot Jew. I was born in Ioannina, and both sides of my family are Romaniot Jews as far back as we can find.
What do you mean, in your family, they spoke this language between them, your parents?
Absolutely.
And really? So you speak this language?
Yes, and I say again, it's not a different language, it's proper Greek. Any Greek person can understand it, except for the wishes and curses and expressions that come in Hebrew and Aramaic and all the other Turkish and all the other elements surviving, lingual elements surviving in this language. Otherwise, it's proper Greek that anyone can understand, and it also has some types of words that are difficult for just any person to understand because it is Hebrew words that have been Hellenized. They have been given a Greek ending.
Okay, give us an example. Example.
Oh, okay. In my hometown of Ioannina, the Jews lived mostly in and around the castle, the area of the castro. There, the people who have lived all their lives there, even though they are not Jews but Christians, still today use some Hellenized forms of Hebrew words without even knowing exactly what they are. For instance, I will try this now in English and Greek together. I will do my best. For instance, you can hear people saying, we ate so much yesterday, we hadn't performed such an achla for ages. All the other words being Greek, of course, and achla being as you hear it. And that comes from the verb ohelet, to eat. And in the past tense, it means I ate, we ate so much. People still use that word without knowing.
Lechol, lechol.
Exactly. Without knowing now, of course, after all these years, where it comes from. But it does mean food. A lot of food. We ate a lot of food. Also, people who want to speak without being understood by somebody else, they can say, look at that dze over there, which the word has come to mean the guy, that person, that a little bit weird, maybe out of the ordinary. But you realize it comes from the pronoun dze and zot, dze. But everything in the Romaniot language of Ioannina, everything has become either not softer but harder, like you would say ze has become ze because it's easier to pronounce. Also another element of it, I'm jumping from one thing to the other, I'm afraid, is masculinization, if that's the right word. Like they've made some forms that are female, like you would say keila hazot into masculine, keila hazeh. Mapa hazot, as you would make the dedication of a mapa to the synagogue, you would say hamapa hazeh, etc., etc. They would say hamapa hazot, you would say normally, etc., etc. They would put hamapa hazeh, making it.
Why?
I'm not sure exactly why, because I'm not a scholar of languages, but maybe they felt that it was more formal, the masculine.
But how many people speak Romaniot nowadays?
Nowadays, there are very few real descendants of the Romaniot Jews of Ioannina. But as I said to you, anyone could speak it and understand it, except for specific words, like the examples that I gave you. So one element is the masculinization, and I was going to say something else too. Anyway, that went by the way.
But the problem with Jewish languages in general, I mean also Desmo and Ladino and Yiddish, of course, it's not only because you have Hebrew words or Aramaic words in the language, you have all the spirit of the Jewish tradition. Is it true for Romaniot also? I can understand that a Greek one or someone who speaks Greek can understand Romaniot, but can he understand what all this spirit is in a word like you have given us a sample? Is it so easy to understand?
I feel that it may be easier to understand than other traditions because the Greek Jews have been here for such a long time and they were quite assimilated in several ways in that today you can talk about them as being secular traditional, obviously being very aware of being Jews and very proud of being Greek Jews, but not very religious in the strict Jewish term of the word, like keeping kosher and, you know, living in the strict Jewish way. So because of this, I think it would be easier to approach this tradition than others. And for this reason, it didn't differ all that much in everyday life from the other, let's say, Ioannina Jews, because that's, for instance, where I come from. And that even had a bearing on what happened to them during the Holocaust, in that it was perhaps easier for them to hide among the general population, perhaps not in Ioannina, but in Athens, where some people found refuge, than it was, for instance, for the Jews of Thessaloniki, that the women spoke Ladino and they had a different accent in the little Greek that they spoke, and they were very easy to pinpoint. That didn't happen to the Romani Jews. But I didn't answer your question. I'm afraid I cannot be extremely specific with this, because it's something that really might take more thought than just a quick interview like this and research. But I do think it's easier to approach, because it has many elements that are also pertinent to the general Greek population.
So where is exactly Ioannina?
Ioannina. It's in northwestern Greece. If you take a straight line from Corfu, the island of Corfu, which is well known, it's 2 hours inland from the coast. You could say it's the capital of Epirot Greece, a city with a great tradition in history and letters. Very traditional place, beautiful place. If you haven't visited, I would highly recommend it. There is a large synagogue to be seen there, a Jewish district where sadly no more Jews live there, because the history of the city changed drastically during World War II and the Holocaust. The history in general, and particularly of course the Jewish history of the city. When I was born there several years ago, there was a community of about 130. Now I'm afraid there's about 35 individuals that live there. We're just going to visit in a few days because my mom's still there. And it's a very important community. For instance, one difference that you would be able to detect is in the synagogal melody. Even though from the 15th century that the Sephardim developed the printing here, the art of printing, and this is how their own prayer book, the one they had developed for themselves, started to be used in general and to be bought by the Romaniot as well. And this is why they inserted their piyutim and their own instructions within the pages, because it was not, strictly speaking, their own prayer book, which they used up until then, handwritten of course. You find that oops, I lost my train of thought. No, we were talking about the printing, the prayer book.
Yes.
But what was I getting to? I hope you're going to edit this. Okay, so to go back to where I began about the synagogal melody, so even though the prayer book would have been the same, you can still hear, actually, I don't know for how many more years in Ioannina, the synagogal melody of the Romaniot. We have made some recordings here at the museum of that, of two parts of it. First of all, this part of the synagogal liturgy, and second, the Haggadah of Pesach, which is very specific among the Romaniot. If you hear it for the first time, you will recognize all the words, obviously, because it's the Hebrew prayers that you know, but the chanting, the melody, is totally different. And it will remind you, I think, of Byzantine Psalms. There's a lot of repetition in the chanting. So it is quite different. And I say, I don't know for many more years, how many more years, because there is an elderly man now in Ioannina, a chazan, called Samuel Cohen, who still does the Romaniot way of the prayers in the synagogue and all the liturgy. But he's elderly, and may God spare him for many years, but I don't know for how many more he will still be able to do it. This is why we've recorded it here.
You have some Romaniot in New York also, I've heard. There is a synagogue now.
Yes, there is a Keilah Kedoshah Ioannina, which is in Broom Street, in the Chinatown area nearby of New York. This is one of seven that used to exist many, many years ago, of Ioannina Jews that moved there in the beginning of the 20th century, mostly for economic reasons. There was an economic recession in Greece, and not only Jews, but obviously many Christians too, at that time emigrated to the States. These communities were reinforced after the war because the survivors, many of them, by that stage had their lonely living relatives in New York, having lost their entire families here. There was maybe an uncle, cousins, brothers, sisters, who knows. So many of them joined them after the war. So that's when the time that they were reinforced in the, after the mid-40s and early 50s. At the same time, of course, when many people also moved to Israel. And the people who are attending there now are descendants of the Ioannina, mostly Jews, who have built this Keilah Kedoshah Ioannina, and they do make a lot of efforts there to keep the spirit alive of the Romaniot culture.
How many Jews were living in Greece before the Holocaust and now?
About 87,000 lived in Greece before the Holocaust, most of them in Thessaloniki. Close to 50,000 lived in Thessaloniki at the time.
And now?
The rest were dispersed in another 28 communities. Now under 5,000 individuals live in Greece. And unfortunately, the numbers are going down.
How many Jews are in Athens and Thessaloniki?
About 2,700 in Athens, just about 1,000 in Thessaloniki. But all are very aware of their tradition and heritage, and keeping the word alive.
And do you have some foreigners, some Jews from other countries who are working here?
Not that many, I don't think. There are some Israelis who married people who went there for study.
No Americans.
And came back. Few Americans, mostly connected with Greece in other ways. Of course, they have made touch here with the local community, but I wouldn't think that that was what drew anyone to join the community here. I wouldn't think so. But yes, there are some foreigners living here who are Jewish and are in touch with us.
And so what happened exactly in Thessaloniki during the war? What were the main problems of what were the problems over there when the Nazis came, because it was very everybody was quite destroyed over there? What happened exactly?
Well, as I said before, it was a very prominent community. It was very well known as the Mother of Israel and the Queen of Israel in the East of
Mediterranean. Jerusalem in the Balkans.
Exactly, Jerusalem in the Balkans. So it was very prominent. Another point of misfortune for the city and its community was that it fell within the chosen within the German zone of occupation. When Greece was occupied in 1941, it was split in three occupational zones: the Italian, the German, and the Bulgarian. And Thessaloniki was in the German one. So it was the first place that was marked for application of the final solution. The community there was large and distinctive, a big part of the population of the city. It was the first place in Greece. There was this fallacy among the Greek Jews that they wouldn't be harmed. They had been living in peace for a very long time, and those who knew what was happening, because some people had gotten wind and word of what was happening in Europe, felt it had nothing to do with them. They were Greek Jews. They heard about the Polish Jews, the German Jews. They thought, that's an internal thing of them. What have we got to do with it? So some were appeased like that. And in Thessaloniki, it was the first place where these measures took place, like already from the summer of 1942, confiscations of properties, a registration of properties, forced labor, gathering the men for forced labor and things like that, happened already from the summer of 1942, from July mainly of 1942. This mobilized certain local elements, such as, for instance, the Archbishop Damaskinos, who wrote the letter in the early spring of 1943 of protestation against the singling out and persecution of the Jews. But the machine was already moving. Everything had already been put in motion. Some Salonika Jews who were suspicious of what was happening, who did not believe the words of Rabbi Koretz, who had told them to cooperate, to try and, you know, appease the occupiers by cooperating, and left. They hid in Athens, in other places, among them my husband's family, my own husband's five brothers and mother and father managed to reach here Athens, and through Rafina escaped to Turkey and to Israel, and that they were saved. They were from Thessaloniki, but unfortunately they were a minority. Most of the people were arrested there in the spring, late spring of 1943, and were sent with 20-21 train trips to the north. Most of them lost their lives in Auschwitz, although there were Salonika and Greek Jews in all the camps, all the concentration.
Most of them are Sephardic Jews who were speaking Judaismo.
Yes, from Thessaloniki, the vast majority were. Among them, there were a few who had Italian citizenship and managed to escape in this way, and a few who had Spanish citizenship or who claimed Spanish citizenship, and they, through various adventures, were also saved. They served some time in Bergen-Belsen, but not as a death camp, and they were saved. It's a very long story, as you realize, but the majority, yes, they perished there, and they were, almost all of them, Sephardic Jews.
What book is important about the history of Jews in Greece we can read in English? What kind of book would you recommend?
Well, one book that's very comprehensive, it's a little outdated as to the contact information, but that one could easily make up, is a book that was researched and written by the first director of this museum, Nicholas Stavroulakis, and it's called Jewish Sites and Synagogues of Greece. That's available in English, and it's a very good book. If one is looking for concise and updated information, also the museum's website at www.jewishmuseum.gr also has important information.
And the museum is 39 Nikis Street in Athens. So can you tell us a few words about your name? Is it Batinu? Does it mean anything?
Well, although I've already said that I'm Romaniot, the name comes from the Sephardic tradition. It means Ishmaelite. Actually, as far as I was able to tell from looking through name databases, etc., it means Ishmaelite. So, it was Hellenized in that my father was called Batinos, and I'm called Batinu, as is any Greek name, the ending of Greek names like that. It was also to be found in Corfu and Athens, further to Yannin.
And Zanet is Janet.
My Hebrew name is Hannah. Uh-huh. Jeanette is French. It's my grandmother's name. At the time when she was given her name, French names were in vogue. So while her grandmother was Aneta, she became Jeanette. And I got my name after her.
Thank you, Jeanette.
Thank you very much.